It's Friday, January 19th, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, government shutdown, now in day 28. 28, folks. That's like a February. Dems flood into the 2020 presidential race. So far, it's Elizabeth Warren, Richard Ojeda, Julian Castro, Tulsi Gabbard, Kirsten Gillibrand, and a couple of guys named John Delaney and Andrew Yang. Nancy and Donnie play hard-nosed politics of the State of the Union and plan congressional visit to Afghanistan to visit troops. Oh, and they're going to go to Brussels, too, to reaffirm America's commitment to NATO. But Trump says, no, you're not getting your plane, Nancy. No. Republican Representative Steve King of Iowa stripped of his committee assignments after he complains to the New York Times that you can't even say you're a white supremacist anymore. Political correctness stuff. Conservatives freak out as AOC gets on the House Financial Services Committee. Dun, dun, dun! And AOC gives social media and Twitter lessons to her Democratic colleagues during his first week in office. Oh, I don't know which senator or which colleague, which representative I'd like to see more learning that to how to use Twitter, but we'll get to that. And will this be the straw that broke the camel's back? Will Trump finally be impeached? Well, after BuzzFeed's latest story that reported that Trump instructed Cohen to lie to Congress about the Trump Moscow project, ooh, man, it's looking nasty. And that's the day after, that just broke this morning, that's the day after the Wall Street Journal broke the story yesterday that during the early days of the 2016 campaign, Cohen hired an IT firm to manipulate polls to show that Trump was a real contender. And yes, Cohen claims that he did so at the request of Trump. Today's PA focus. Oh, it was amazing. It was inauguration in Harrisburg this week. Yep, let's see what the Wolf Fetterman team can get done. As if they were fawning over some bipartisanship a little bit in that inauguration. Well, we're going to have some completely unsolicited advice for them. And the Pennsylvania Capitol Star, it's going to be a new progressive investigative online news source in Harrisburg. Ooh, that's pretty cool. But let's hope that the little social media fails that they had with their launch doesn't trip them up too much. Social media 101, folks. Come on, get it straight. Brendan Boyle and Dwight Evans get seated in the House Ways and Means Committee. Right before that, Brendan Boyle came out in support of Medicare for all. What? And Congressman Tom Marino resigns less than 2 weeks into his term. He's like, too many Democrats now. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go make some money in the business sector and use my business acumen to create wealth, jobs for people in my area. And today's last call, Space Beer News, Star Trek Discovery is back! Season 2 launched last night and it was freaking awesome! I'll have a little kind of take on that. A team of NASA scientists are proposing to land a drone called Dragonfly on Saturn's largest moon, Titan. That comes after following research from the Cassini probe. Remember Cassini probe? They just kind of had to finally crash that into the atmosphere last year. But the Cassini probe found that Titan actually has an atmosphere that rains organic compounds onto the surface of the moon. So they're thinking, let's put a drone down there and check it out. We'll see. And in really enormous, big news. Space Force. That's right. Steve Carell will star in a new Netflix series called Space Force. I can't believe it. I'm out of my mind. Sean told me about it this morning. I missed it, and I'm freaking psyched. Steve Carell in Space Force. It's going to be great. And Free Will is going all blueberries with this week's can release. Blueberry Mash is a kettle sour ale with blueberry, vanilla, and milk sugar. Give you a little lowdown on what's happening down at Free Will. Want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. And you can tune in to Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And tune in to Rick's Daily Show from 9 to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday at therickssmithshow.com. And be sure to download his podcast wherever you get them. And if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media, folks. And you can help support Pull No Punches, progressive homegrown media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, no problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click the big blue donate button on the right sidebar, and give us whatever you want. Best way to help us out, though, become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, how you been?
Pretty good.
Yeah, we had a break week last week.
Yeah, I had a sinus infection that was going on for the past couple of weeks. So
yeah, you had a sinus infection, and I had my kids were off from school on, or my daughter was home sick from school on Thursdays. I had to go into work on Friday, and it was a big mess. So it feels like it's been forever.
It's amazing the process I had to go through to get a $4 bottle of prescription medicine for my fucking sinus infection.
America's got the best medicine in the world. What are you talking about, Sean?
I know. And this is like the first time I've had health insurance, like private insurance, since I was like 10 years old.
Yep.
And like I called the local primary care physician. They didn't know if they were taking my insurance because they just started getting credentialed with UPMC, mm-hmm. which is who my provider is out here. So it's like, and this was like, started Friday. I felt like it was getting better over the weekend, right? And then Tuesday, it was just the pressure headache, and it felt like fluid was building up in my ear, and I was trying to get a hold of them, and I was just a really miserable, angry person that day. And yeah, and so I was able to call up my doctor from back home the day before. The next day, I explained to them what happened, and they wrote a prescription for me. But it's amazing, like, the process you have to go through.
See, this is the thing, right? It's like, on the one hand, so much of the focus has been, and look, justifiably so, like, so much of the focus has been, like, around, like, expanding the number of people that have health insurance, right? You know, that was the kind of, like, the ACA, the Obamacare, and all that. But once you get into the system, right, then you start realizing that fucking actually having insurance in the private industry is a freaking nightmare to begin with. Because it's like a mishmash, a patch quilt, like not even a complete one, that is such a hassle when you're sick, right? You need to get something done. Unless you have an absolutely awesome healthcare plan, right? Most people, like, their experience with the health system is absolutely horrendous.
So, and it's like, I know what I want. I know what I need. You're like, well, we can't see you until all of your paperwork gets filed over to us and from your previous doctor. And it's like, you can't just write me a prescription for a sinus infection, it's turning into an ear infection now. Like, and it's also the type of thing where it's like, I'm trying to get an appointment set up with my primary care physician, which is what they want you to do. But it's like, they don't know what's going on. So like, I should have to pay $150 of copayment to go to the ER to go get a prescription for like $4.
Right.
I mean, like, this is like the type of system. Yeah.
Here's a little tip. This is not a solution, but, do you have any of these, what the heck are they called? Oh, man, I'm just going to forget. We've taken my kids to them sometimes. Like, instead of going to the ER, you can go to these kind of
urgent care centers.
Urgent care centers or something like this.
There's some in the area, but again, it's like the one at the giant supermarket is like $80 to go to. And it's like, I don't know if UPMC has any urgent care centers. And if they charge a $15 copay or it's a $150 copay, like going to an emergency room.
Right.
And, like, yeah, it's –
yep. Well, they have other ones that are like, I'll think about it. I'll tell you what this stuff is, because it's like, it saves you. It saves you a bunch of time. All you got to do, you make sure ahead of time, like which ones of these, and now that you know, which one of these ones that will take UPMC stuff, and then you deal with it there. But it's a nightmare. And this is like all the more reason, like, if it's not just like basically making sure that everyone has health care, I mean, this kind of garbage alone is argument for me for Medicare for All. I mean, the idea, the last thing you want to have to deal with when you're sick, right? And forget about just being sick. Like, imagine if you break your bone or something like this, the last thing you want to do is like to have to freaking spend time figuring out and like navigating like some
which
kind
hospital
of,
you have to go to, because right. There's four different hospitals in the area. One's by Highmark, another one's by UPMC, yeah, and another exactly. One's Geisinger. So it's like you go to an out of market, an out of market hospital, you might get foot with the whole entire bill.
Right, exactly. So it's like, you know, this is like, This is why. This is just another reason why, everybody. And you all know this, but this is just – it's a broken, broken, broken system.
We got the best healthcare system in the world. It's so good that even Rand Paul is traveling up to Canada to go get a surgery done that he needs to take.
Yep, see that.
Which I think is a stupid comparison because he's paying for it out of pocket. But
– No. Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll tell you a little the last call today. I'll say it now since you were talking about health stuff. Is like, so I pretty much guessed that I've got sleep apnea, right? I have to do this like sleep test that's gonna come up in the stuff, and I'm actually hoping that that's what it is exactly, because I've never been so exhausted in my life. Like look, people know him. You look at my production, like how many articles have I written for Raging Chicken of late? I have not. I've been barely hanging on. I can't think straight, right? It's been a long period of time. But hopefully that's going to get taken care of, and then I'm going to be like a loving person again half the time. And then my dog got neutered this week, so there you go.
Well, that's good.
Well, now we got all the good stuff out of the way. Dripping sinus infections, dog neutering, and sleep apnea. Let's get into it. Look, we're not going to go into the enormous list of people that are going to run in the Democratic primary. I'm just going to say this off the top, like right from now. There is nobody that I am backing right now, and I'm not going to back anyone until this stuff starts to shake out. I am not going to get into these absolutely, in my view, worthless conversations this time about which is the best candidate and all this other kinds of garbage. And I'll tell you why. It's because what is going to matter more than anything else in this next election is going to be the one who's got the chops on the campaign trail. Right. It's like in an ideal world, we'd pick our policy platform that is the best policy platform, and then we could run policy platform against policy platform, and the person is just going to represent that platform. But that's not the world we live in. And so we need a candidate that's actually going to be hot on the trail. And that's what's going to be important. So,
well, I'll leave it at this. Ojeda, Castro, and Gabbard, they're not going to make it to Iowa.
Well, I didn't even know John Delaney and Andrew Yang were running until I was like looking at the Guardian list. I do have to say, have you seen Andrew Yang's platform?
He wants, I think he wants UBI, right? Universal Basic Income.
He's interesting, actually. Yeah. The Guardian describes him like this. He's a former tech executive and entrepreneur who's running the longest of long shot campaigns centered on the perils of automation. His central plank is a plan to give every American adult a salary of $1,000 per month paid for in tax by a tax on companies that benefit the most from automation. Can this political novice move the needle on a universal basic income? That's his primary platform. And I swear to God, that's the one thing about that guy. I hope he gets into the debates, and I hope they start talking about the UBI. Because most people have never heard of UBI before. They don't know what the hell it is. And that to have that as part of a national conversation, man, I'm for it.
And I know that UBI was being talked about when I was in Switzerland. We went to Oktoberfest 5 or 6 years ago now. And Switzerland was voting. I think they voted it down at the time.
Narrowly, yep. They narrowly voted it down.
Yeah, and we were staying in Zurich, and I think it was like €1,000 a month that they were talking about.
Yep.
Or a thousand francs a month.
Yep. And so, I think if we could have that discussion like publicly, that'd be so awesome, because like it's got this kind of like, you know, this hip kind of I don't know, aura to it, right? Because it's this cool thing, right? UBI, everyone, you pay everyone the sequel. But there's real differences in terms of how you bring that out. And Descent, the magazine Descent, had an awesome breakdown of that not too long ago. Jacobin's been has written some good pieces on it about the difference between the kind of libertarian version of this, which basically says you pay everybody $1,000 and you get rid of all social programs, right? Versus kind of much more progressive and kind of like left-leaning ones are basically saying, no, this is your baseline. You have you support all your social programs, but you have a baseline that kind of say $1,000 a month of basic income that basically gets everybody out of poverty, right? It's not either or. So anyways, yeah, that's just that. So we'll see what happens here. I mean, already, if you spend any time on Twitter, you know the sniping's already begun. You can get into the,
There's no sniping coming from my Twitter account.
Oh, no. You're an angel, man. You're an angel.
Well, I've been back at it lately.
There you go. But the government shutdown is now in day 28. That's nothing but happy news.
Yeah, this is going to be something that's really interesting. I want to see who caves first. Because the longer this goes out, the more this plays into the Republicans' hands, where they see like they're getting what they want out of this, which is pain and suffering. You know, federal workers not getting their paychecks because people think federal workers make too much money. We're starting to see some of the stories, but now it's like what happens after a month of this, like with the actual social programs. You know, trash like hundreds of years of worth of damage is being done in our national parks, which is being affected by the shutdown.
Yep.
TSA workers are, going out and working.
And leaving and quitting because they're like, no, I'm not doing this for free.
And did you see some of the stories that's happening, like in some of the airports where they're playing, like they are just blaring rap music through the PA speakers as people are going through, like people are playing. Some of the songs you got to pull up, like some parody songs from like rappers. I saw on Twitter, someone was like saying that they're in JFK and they heard Beastie Boys playing over the loudspeaker, like No Sleep Till Brooklyn and stuff like that. Like, so I mean, someone's like, this is like walking into the Twilight Zone. You're walking through this and you hear like Sick Kiddo playing over the loudspeakers, like just completely unedited music that you would never hear in an airport. But because of the shutdown, no one gives a fuck right now. And yep, it's going to be interesting to see how this ends. I don't think the Democrats should cave.
No, look, I give Nancy Pelosi and her crew
like
a ton
not
of credit.
A dollar on the wall. That's it. It's completely non-negotiable.
Yeah, but no, but it's not what she's been great about doing, what they've been great about right out of the gate. It's been bill after bill after bill to open up the government. Right. Let's open up this part of the government. Let's open this part of the government. Let's fund all this stuff and leave it. So basically, it's basically showing, no, we've got all these bills. And the fact that it came out with the one that the Senate agreed to before, and by basically saying, OK, let's go here. Let's pass this. Let's get this through. And then we can talk about border security and kind of like, or this wall thing as a separate bill. Right. So it isolates the wall out of the discussion. Right. Because it takes away the ability of places like Fox News to just basically say like, oh, it's like they don't want the wall, so they're shutting down the government. It's like, no, look, they've passed all this stuff. And you're actually seeing it for the first time being reflected in the poll numbers, which actually showed, that kind of core Trump supporter base that is starting to slip a bit. Right. And I think it's part of this the shutdown. And I think that's why the Trump administration has been scrambling to try to kind of pull money from
the migrant. They brought the caravan back.
Oh, is it back?
The caravan is back.
Oh, my God.
Another caravan of immigrants have come in through Honduras.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's not going to work this time, though. I'll tell you, it's not.
I think the caravan made its way back because of news that broke over the past couple of days, not because of the shutdown.
Well, what blows my mind is that, like, you've got, Lindsey Graham basically gave him a way out the other day, right? He basically kind of proposed it. And I think this is what Lindsey Graham is trying to do. Is like Lindsey Graham trying to give like Trump ways to get him get out. It's like by way of suggestion. He basically said, okay, go ahead, reopen the government, pass these bills, open the government, and then immediately put out like demands for the border wall. And when the border wall and when the Democrats say no, then you declare a national emergency and then you build it. Right. And that would be one way of doing it. But I just think it's because Trump does not want to give an inch. So it's going
to
be interesting.
And it's also interesting to see how that – if he does declare a national emergency, how that plays out.
Yep.
Because, I mean, that's like, you know, something that dictators do. I mean, that is a blatant authoritarian move.
Yep. It's like – again, it's like authoritarian 101. Let's, like, look at how you do this.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so I think Democrats, if they get retained office, should hold a national emergency and then just put three Supreme Court justices on the bench and pack.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Or pass Medicare for all.
Yep. Let's do it, man. We're going to play hardball. We're going to play like winner take all, shoot the moon.
I don't see Justice Roberts. Like, when people talk, I don't see Roberts going ahead with that. Like, you know what I mean? If there's like one person on the bench that is like, you can have a swing vote on things, when it comes towards like constitutionality wise, I don't see him breaking that way.
Yeah, I mean, right for right now, though. I mean, you know, but then, like, you also got, like, you know, RBG has been, you know, she's missed her first oral arguments her entire history on the Supreme Court.
Just two more years.
I know. Really? Seriously? I mean, that's what – seriously.
And that's what she's probably thinking, too, at this point.
I'm sure. But crazy. So, yeah, so there you have it. The shutdown is moving, and it's causing havoc. It's causing havoc. So I got to ask you this one.
There's also going to be state issues that are going to happen soon, too. If this goes up like another few more weeks to a month, SNAP benefits and other payments may not be going down to people on the state levels.
Well, it's funny. I was listening to John Fetterman was on the Rick Smith show last night or two nights ago. And that's one of the questions that Rick was pushing him on, right? Is basically saying, like, look, like, what's going to be the impact, or what are people doing at the state level? You know, and, it, you know, it wasn't pushing hard, but basically, you know, what the point being is that, you know, this is something that, you know, those of us on the left media, is like that we can see this stuff coming from a mile away. Right. And it's like, you know, Rick kind of like putting that on the table with Fetterman was important because say, look, you know what? That is going to be the ultimate question. What are you doing here? Right. What are you doing in order to kind of like protect people? Because, you know, federal workers are not just people in Washington, D.C., you know, like working in these offices that you don't know about. They're people that are down there. You know, and I was jokingly saying before, like before we went on today, is like, you know, what happens if, you know, all the Doppler radar starts going down, right? What happens if, like, you know, the National Weather Service and the NOAA just, you know, they say, well, you know, we can't staff enough people. So we, with all these storms coming, yeah, we can give you a rough guesstimate. But that's just the guy who's here over the weekend, you know.
But imagine trying to take an airplane flight right now.
Yeah.
Air traffic controller is not getting paid.
Right. And this is the thing. This is what I wait for, right? Is like people say, well, you know, they're still essential personnel and they have to report to work. Yeah, but now put yourself in the position of one of those people. Is that you're going on a month.
At what point do you wake up and just say, fuck it, I'm not going to work until this shit's solved?
Or what happens if somebody one of these people snaps, right? What happens if one of them snaps because they're so freaking pissed off? Right. I mean, I worry about that's the kind of stuff I worry about is like if you've ever been out of work for any extended period of time. Right. Especially if it's a situation where, you know, if it's for real, like in here, like a really out of your control or just feels like it's out of your control because you can't find work. You can't find a job. And you're trying is like it starts messing with you. Right. And when if you're forced to go to work and not getting paid, you know, you start thinking like, ah, I see indentured servitude. Right. I thought we got rid of that. Right. But no. And Trump, you know, the fact that you got Trump, he's got a long history of not paying his workers. Right. A big not paying contractors and not. Also, and now he's doing that to these workers here. You can't tell me that that is not going around in their heads. So it's like, oh, I see. Now he's not going to pay us. Yeah. So it's something else, man. It's something else. But in the meantime, it's like, you know, it's been interesting to see Nancy Pelosi seeming to have President Trump's number when it comes to getting under his skin. Yeah.
Yeah. I supported this move. I thought it was great.
Yeah. And the move is like, you know, when Pelosi basically says, hey, you know, I wrote this letter to Trump and saying he might want to consider rescheduling the State of the Union until after the governor opens back up because security, right? Because we worry about security and stuff. And then Trump flips out and basically, you know, cancels the, this plane that Pelosi and some other lawmakers were going to take over to Afghanistan, to Brussels and Egypt. They, you know, visit troops, but also basically say, hey, Brussels, we're not leaving NATO. Just hold, stay with us for a little bit longer.
It's also like, you know, Trump reminds me of the character, the knight from Monty Python, you know, Knights of the Round Table.
Which one?
It's, the knight with the when he gets his arm chopped off.
Me a flesh wound. Well, I don't know. No, but I lopped but I lopped your arm off. No, you didn't.
Get back here! When he starts like, you know, he has no arms, no legs. He's like, "Come on, coward!
Right, come here, I'll bite you."
But I mean, like that's what this is like turning into at this point, and it's it's just a slow motion train wreck and.
Well, I mean, it shows you what, you know, again, this is what, I mean, again, I was thinking about this the other day, was looking at just how all this is being reported on. And this shows you, again, this is like elections have consequences, is the fact that the way our media cycles work, right, unless you're in the majority, right, you're not defining the news. You're always reacting to it. But since Pelosi, you know, is now she's the majority leader and the Democrats are the majority in the House, is that they're, you know, she's come out right by to start driving the news cycle. Right, she's taking initiative after initiative after initiative, right? And whether it's poking at the president, whether it's passing legislation to try to reopen the government, and that is actually changing the dynamic of and changing the narrative really about what's actually happening in the Trump administration. So this is good.
And also, I think where this is good segue is like it shows you that if they want to drive the news cycle, you know, since they're in the majority. They're able to do this, and it looks like that they're promoting that role to AOC at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, well, so she's got her own little school now, right?
Yeah, social media and Twitter. you know, she was invited this week to give her colleagues lessons on how to use Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And which is like, you know, they're already like the Gen Xers and the boomers in this like fucking institution are already like using the millennials' free labor to set this up for the future.
Yeah. I do have these images of like, you know, her being called over to help Senator Leahy figure out.
I don't know if you're anybody over here.
Did you see did you see the smackdown she laid on Lieberman this past week?
Yes.
It's exactly new party. Who dis?
New party, who dis? Yeah, tell people it out there just in case they haven't seen it.
Yeah, what's that?
Tell people about, give them context. So,
so Lieberman was on Cavuto's show on Fox Business and Friends or whatever, and said, you know, he sure hopes that like AOC is not the future face of the party. You know, he wants it to be old white men, pretty much, like Steny Hoyer, to be the future face of the party. Like once like these old white people die. Like what Lieberman wants to do is like straight from Futurama and have like their heads in those plates in those like glass jars and start talking. Like also, if you're at Kutztown, you have to get Dr. Gambone to do his Richard Nixon impersonation of that.
All right. I will tell him.
Best. But like I know, but like that's who the people that like Lieberman wants in office. They want Steny Hoyer to be there for another like 60 years, even though that's physically impossible. And they don't want the party to be black and brown women taking over.
Well, you know,
at this point, and this is pretty much like with Lieberman, but Lieberman, you know, she tweeted out like new party. Who's this?
Who this? Like, I don't even know who you are and nobody knows who you are anymore. You're irrelevant.
Oh, that's right. You used to be a Democrat.
Yeah. You're who now? You're still alive.
Wasn't he like hawking Kavanaugh, like his firm?
Oh, he maybe. Maybe
like his firm has been like hawking some, I think DeVos and shit like that too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So he's a piece of shit. Like, yeah.
Although I have to say, he does have, bizarrely. And this is just random fact for everybody. Bizarrely large and soft hands, just so you know. When I used to work at Politics and Prose in Washington, D.C., he came into, he has released a book. And it gave him for a book talk, and he was signing stuff afterwards. And I was like, you know, having to bring the books over to him as he was signing it. And I said, oh, you know, here's just one bring your books. And he's, oh, thank you very much. And he shook my hand. I'm like, that guy's got like a, It's like one of those like blow up hands, and it, but it's always weird.
You like rip his arm off when you shake his hand?
No. I didn't like him then. So that was a long time ago. But yeah. So I mean, and you know, AOC again. That's a new one. You see that she's continuing to cause waves in terms of like freaking out conservatives too.
Yeah. No. She's on the House Financial Services Committee now.
And
James Wood called her the most dangerous person in America.
There you go.
So,
and why is that? Is she a black belt or something?
Because she's on the House Service Financial Services Committee.
Yeah.
Looking into the banks and the millionaires.
Yep. And now she's going to have access to all that kind of stuff. And she's going to see exactly what's going on. It's not just going to be like second, third hand about this stuff. And guess where that's going to go?
On Twitter. Now, did you see an argument this week? I didn't read into it, but Robert Reich is actually like is worried about the popularity that AOC is gaining, thinking that like the Republicans will just yell at her so much in their echo chamber where they effectively just like nullify her power.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think that's that her the challenge for her is going to be is like, look, she has gone so bright so fast is that she is going to be a target. And she's, you know, when you're doing it from the outside and you're doing it as a campaign, that's one dynamic, but the time scale changes now. Right. So it's not just like here's this deadline, whatever, like this. So the challenge is that you've got enough people that you're working at and you're setting these kind of goals that you're campaigning for all the time. It's because she's going to get attacked left and right. And, you know, I don't think she's like this, but the other danger is also like that is you let something like that get to your head. Right. Every move that she's making sees that she's not doing that. It's always about here's the people I'm with. Right. If you look at her pictures and her Instagram and all this kind of stuff, it's all look at these first year lawmakers coming in, she's taking pictures with them and talking about the we. We are the new generation, which is all awesome. So I worry about other new like first year lawmakers also coming in, representatives coming in and start getting resentful of her. I worry about that. But these are all on the margins. Right. These are not like at the core of it. So I don't think so. So. There's that. I was glad to see that actually Steve King, Republicans finally realized this week actually that Steve King is a racist.
It took them how many years?
They were so surprised, Sean. They could not believe it.
He hit it really well.
He's like, I've had that guy over for dinner. I couldn't believe what came out of his mouth when he talked to the New York Times.
It's like what Chuck Grassley said right before the election last year. You know, Steve King's important for Iowa. And I need Steve King.
I need Steve King.
I wonder what happened like in those like past 2.5 months. Cause he was always a white supremacist, right? And a white nationalist.
Yep. I think there's
you just can't say it publicly anymore. That's what happened.
Exactly.
Anyone know what's wrong with anything? I don't know anything wrong with being a white supremacist.
He's a white supremacist. I'm a white supremacist. What's wrong with that? And those other people are now looking. That's what's going on in Congress right now. Is because you got the other Republicans looking saying, oh, no. You don't tell other people that I'm that too. No. Shh.
Hey, we're in the minority now. We can't be saying this shit.
Exactly.
Did you hear what happened yesterday with the one representative from Missouri? I don't know his name. Jason Smith or something like that. The whitest of like white names possible. He yelled, "Go back to Puerto Rico" on the House floor to a Latino member from Los Angeles, and the guy Tony Menendez, whatever. He's like, "Actually, I'm from Los Angeles. Oh, I'm not from Puerto Rico."
Oh my and then the Republicans- God. Jason Smith. Yep.
And then Republicans in the same thread, they had a voice vote on a continuing resolution. No one was paying attention, but the Democrats were. So they had a voice vote, and all the Democrats all said aye, and none of the Republicans said anything until afterwards. And now the Republicans want to get their votes on the record, and the Democrats are like, nope, we'll take that up next week.
Yep, exactly.
So it's amazing seeing like how the Republicans are handling being in the minority now in the House.
Oh, God. All right, so here it is. So this is Representative Tony Cardenas said on Thursday night he accepted an apology from Representative Jason Smith, who acknowledged that he yelled, "Go back to Puerto Rico," at Democrats during a tense situation on the House floor earlier in the day, but denied his remark was racially motivated. I love this spin. Are you ready? A Smith aide said that the Missouri Republican intended the comment as a shot at House Democrats over their 30-member jaunt to Puerto Rico last weekend, an event that got heavy coverage in conservative media rather than an attack on a specific lawmaker. But in a week that saw the House overwhelmingly condemn Iowa GOP Representative Steve King for racist remarks, tensions remain high. And that is from Politico this week. So there you go. Jason Smith. I was really just talking about this other thing. Not like... Because when I was talking about it, like the other thing, and the reason why they're talking about that Puerto Rico trip on Fox News has nothing to do with race. Crazy, crazy, crazy. That's nuts, man. Yeah, they're called to the carpet, right? And it really is exactly what you said. So, yep, you're not in the majority anymore. So guess what? Your cover's gone.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it makes you wonder, like, all the shit that's been said that never got reported on because they were in a majority.
Yep. No, exactly that. But last but not leastly, in national news this week, there's a lot of stuff going on. But you know, it's like we're kind of going slow this week. Will he not be impeached after some of the latest revelations coming out that one Cohen basically spilled the beans to the Wall Street Journal the other day. Basically, he hired an IT firm called like Redfin or Red something like this. Forget the name of them, but basically hired them to manipulate polls early on in the early on in the campaign process for 2016. Excuse me.
Did you see he also spent like $13,000 on a Twitter account? Women for Cohen.
Yeah, Women for Cohen, right? Right? Crazy stuff, right? So the organization was called Red Finch, actually, owned by this guy.
Who's
Gouger,
totally not from
Gouger.
Russia.
What's that?
Totally not from Russia.
No, this guy's not, actually. He's but it was hilarious, right? This John Gouger's name. Basically, he said that, he was hired by Cohen, and Cohen basically says, yeah, it was at the direction of Trump to go and manipulate these polls on things like the Drudge Report and stuff like this, right? Just a way to get the conservatives to start thinking that he was actually a legitimate contender. And then Cohen basically showed up at the Trump Tower, right, at the Trump Organization office. And basically Gouger said that he was that Cohen or someone had given him a Walmart bag filled of like $13,000 and said that he would in cash and would get the rest of it.
Not traceable. There's no like serial numbers on there.
Right. And then he said that he would get the rest of it. Yeah, he was supposed to get it up to $50,000. Was his fee for it, but he was going to get the rest of it when he completes the job. And then what the funny part about this, right, was that Cohen comes out and he denies part of it, right? He basically says, "I never handed over a bag of Walmart cash. It was all done in checks." Right? So it's like the dispute is over the form of payment, right? And I actually hope some of it was in checks, because guess what? Checks are traceable, right?
They have a paper trail.
Exactly.
This is like, I mean, you've been saying this since the beginning, that like this is a like shitty fucking mob story.
Yeah.
Like this is a fucking crime family, one of the most incompetent crime families that happened just win an election somehow, and now all their dirty laundry is getting aired out in public. And shocking, they operate it like a fucking mob syndicate. Like it is like
exactly.
This is like a 1930s like Looney Tunes type of like fucking mob like stuff. It's
it's exactly what it is.
I mean, like, yeah. Oh, yes. Like, actually, you know what? I can see them going around with like $30,000 in fucking cash because they're pieces of shit. Like,
exactly. Exactly.
Like, imagine if someone just dumped, like, put it like a paper bag or like a plastic bag of cash right in front of you. The rest is yours if you get it done.
So, yes, here you go, man. It's like, hey, don't spend it all in one place, huh? You see, like, so seriously.
I mean, I wonder where the money came from, where it was washed through, like him washing the money. Like, where'd they wash it from? Like, which Well,
there's these trial balloons that are coming out by like some, I don't know where in the Trump organization they're coming from, but you start hearing these reporters referring to discussions about maybe this was what but there's questions being raised, like where, yeah, who exactly that came from? Because somebody was basically saying like, well, you know that Trump is allowed to spend as much money as he wants from his own personal account on his campaign. Right. And this was like a comment that somebody made to a news journalist about that it was not representing Trump. But you basically saying, from my perspective, at least, that's people close to Trump trying to see which one of these excuses or these denials or lies is basically going to try to seem legitimate. Right. And they just you can't at this point.
And then, did you see like the Rudy Giuliani video the other day?
Yeah.
We know that we didn't collude with Russia. We never said a word about collusion.
No collusion.
Never happened.
Well, the Cohen, like the paying for poll manipulation story was bad, but the BuzzFeed story that broke today, this looks pretty serious.
Yeah, and this is probably what the story they knew that was coming down the pike, the past couple of days with the collusion stuff, because people were like saying like when Rudy Giuliani was going on TV saying there was no collusion out of nowhere, and the same thing with Laura Trump going on TV saying there was no collusion with Russia. We never mentioned Russia ever.
Right.
Well, this might this BuzzFeed story might have a little bit more to do with it. They reported, Jason Leopold reported, that Trump instructed Cohen to lie to Congress about the Trump Moscow building deal.
Yep. So here it is. This is from BuzzFeed. So President Donald Trump, this is like right up for the top of this page, top of the story, directed his longtime attorney, Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress about negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, according to two federal law enforcement officials involved in an investigation of the matter. Trump also supported a plan set up by Cohen to visit Russia during the presidential campaign in order to personally meet President Vladimir Putin and jumpstart the tower negotiations. Make it happen, the sources said Trump told Cohen. And even as Trump told the public he had no business deals with Russia, the sources said Trump and his children, Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr., received regular detailed updates about the real estate development from Cohen, who they put in charge of the project. Right. I mean, that's if this pans out. Right. If this reporting pans out, it's going to be incredible. Now we say, so Jason Leopold and Anthony Cormier, right, I think is his co-writer there. They have broken several major stories in relation to the Trump Tower stuff, and they were poo-pooed about them early on, and now every single thing is coming true. So they've got some really good sources. And
Jason Leopold's one of the best reporters out there.
Yeah, he's freaking amazing.
Especially if you follow Jason Leopold in the independent world over the since from like 2000 Occupy Wall Street.
Yep.
When I first got to know him up through like 2016, 2017 before his stint at BuzzFeed, like, you know, his reporting is always spot on.
Yep.
Like, and he's not going to report like something that's bullshit or that's not true.
Yep. So there you have it. I mean, this is going to be major. So
and this is, oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, if this plays out, then, you know, look, I'm sure already that you've got, you know, Democrats who have already been calling for kind of impeachment hearings. They're going to bring this right back to the forefront of things, too, as well. And it's going to get harder and harder for Congress, really, so to avoid this.
Did you see what the video The Atlantic put out yesterday or a couple days ago?
I did
on
not.
YouTube. So The Atlantic released a three, the editor of The Atlantic. They've been around since Civil War, right? Or was that The Nation?
I'll figure it out. Go ahead. You talk about it, I'll figure it out.
The Atlantic is a pretty moderate liberal news magazine. It's not going to be as progressive as The Nation or Mother Jones in those types. And the editor of The Atlantic put out a video yesterday calling for impeachment. And he said he laid out, like, listen, we studied the causes of the last three major impeachment trials in the House with Clinton, Nixon, and Andrew Johnson. And he's like, we examined them, and even if the impeachments don't go through, it still has a profound and positive effect on our political system because it neuters, it takes the arguments out of the street politics, and it forces Congress to debate these issues at hand. And he's like, you know, you look at the situations and he's like, compared it to Andrew Johnson, the most like Trump, you know, autocratic, incompetent buffoon who, even though he wasn't impeached, it completely neutered his position of power. And it soured because he explained it did a few things. It focused the Johnson administration on the impeachment process, and it actually made them start actually doing their work with government and stuff like that, and it prevented them from setting fires elsewhere. And they also said that, you know, it soured it made his political appointees toxic for the rest of his tenure, and it took like the amount of like political cartoons of Andrew Johnson, the bickering back and forth between both sides, out of the public and into the into Congress, where it forced Congress to actually have these arguments settled out on the floor instead of like just nitpicking in the newspapers and the media at the time. And I actually think that's a good argument for impeaching Trump right now.
Yeah.
No, you're like, I think it's something that's going to be inevitable if he gets I think he's going to get impeached by the House. And I think at this point, the more this stuff comes out, I think it's actually a better bargaining chip for the Democrats to pull off the impeachment of Donald Trump and say, this is what, and just use that as a bully pulpit in the elections.
Look, this stuff is more, in my mind, this is this kind of stuff that is more important than anything else. Right. Because I think that the narrative that was being pushed by kind of like establishment Democrats for a long time, about like the Russia stuff, you know, even now you hear like that. There was the revelation that, you know, or big questions about, because the FBI basically, this is last week, but, you know, I don't know, we didn't talk about it because we didn't have our show last week, but the FBI basically came out that the FBI had opened an investigation about whether or not that Trump has been basically on the payroll of Putin, right? You know, basically, is he an asset of Putin? That's how the liberal media especially started kind of framing it, right? And it put it in this thing like, yes, it's like, you know, again, put us back into this Cold War kind of way of thinking about stuff. And I think that's a losing line, right, for the Democrats. This stuff, however, is not. Because this is about showing that there was a violations of, say, campaign of campaign law, of election law, basically that he's been kind of lying kind of under oath and attempting to kind of manipulate the election, the outcome of the election. So basically it starts to underscore the fact that Trump got to office through illegitimate means. Right. And that, I think, has a lot more resonance than the big picture stuff, even if all the Russia stuff plays out. But
yeah, and like I think as we were saying before with like the committee hearings and using the committee process to go after him, I think you can do that. But now I think the more this stuff comes out, impeaching, I think it's going to be, and it's, you can't ignore it. Like as Rashida Tlaib said, impeach the motherfucker. Like, it's time we impeach the motherfucker.
That's it. My, Sean language. Yeah. don't you remember, we have to behave like the good people.
Oh, he's a doctor.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Well, this is just, okay, this is your random kind of like teaching moment for the day, since Sean brought this up. So here it is. The Atlantic was actually founded in 1857. And that was founded in part by, some of them were right around the Civil War. The mission statement was signed by people like Ralph Waldo Emerson, Herman Melville, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and Nathaniel Hawthorne, right? Whereas the Nation was founded actually by abolitionists in 1865. So but the Nation is much more kind of overtly political. Right. And kind of like positioned and argumentative, where you have the Atlantic takes a little bit more backstep here. So if you ever want to know about two of the kind of like founding kind of like progressive or kind of liberal publications in this country, there you go. 1865 and 1857. How about that? You're riveted, huh? You can't barely leave a word. It's so freaking interesting.
But no, I mean, it's I think it's something we have to, it's, yeah, I mean, I definitely recommend watching the video. The editor of The Atlantic lays it out in a very clear, concise argument in like in 3.5 minutes. But it's pretty much saying like, yeah, no, we don't want, he's like, he said, I didn't set out to like endorse the impeachment of Donald Trump until like the events of the past couple of weeks.
Right, right.
Like it's, I think we're hitting that point where it's just going to hit a tidal wave where impeachment's going to be a viable option. And if Democrats don't impeach, then it's going to be a, I think it will be a mistake on their end.
Yep. Well, so we'll see what they do. We'll see what they do. I still don't think he's going to be impeached before 2020. But that's just what I think. I think they're going to let it hold it out.
That, do you think the leadership will?
Yep. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But we'll see. We'll see. I think the focus is going to be right now, because what's going to happen immediately, and this is why I think this, is I think it has all to do with politics, not with reality, or not with like actually the, like the there being evidence or things like this. I think the Mueller investigation is going to play itself out, right? And that's going to put us what they're saying, what you hear kind of different reporters, but we're talking about maybe end of February, March, maybe even into April, you have the Mueller investigation will be concluded. You're going to have more of these revelations that are come out. Cohen is going to testify before Congress again in early February. By then, as that the campaign for 2020 is going to be in full gear. I think attention is going to be wanting to the Democratic Party has always shown that they'd rather focus on that as opposed to getting mired in controversy because they're afraid of conflict. So that they're going to focus instead on using the electoral process to try to kind of win the election. And then using all this stuff as more of a political tactic in the campaign against Trump about why he needs to be ousted rather than going through an impeachment process. I think there's going to be people in the leadership who are going to say that the impeachment is going to distract from the campaign. That's just my gut feeling.
And I think that's wrong. Like, I think that would be a wrong argument because I think you can tie.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you.
Use it to sink them. Like, I mean, this cannot be parallel towards Clinton. I mean, Clinton got impeached over a sex act.
Yep.
Like,
look,
rewrite history here.
I know. But you know the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is gun shy and stuff like this. I mean, for me, we're at the point now after what we saw from the FBI revelation. About the reporting that came out about that, about the manipulation of the election, about the Trump instructing Cohen to lie to Congress. Once you start doing those stuff, is that you're now in a position where I think well positioned where you can actually go forward with impeachment. Right, which means that you're going to be running against Pence unless Pence decides that he's not going to run, right? And Pence is implicated in all this shit, right? Because Pence was the head of the campaign, right? And so basically, instead of you basically go forward and impeach Trump, right, and then basically use all of this stuff to go after everyone in the Republican Party.
It also makes you wonder, locally. Why Tom Marino resigned 2 weeks into this term.
That makes you wonder, doesn't it? The first guy to come out in support of Trump?
In Pennsylvania, and he ran the Pennsylvania Trump campaign.
Yep. Well, we'll talk about a little bit in segment two. Yes, indeed. Well, cool. So we'll see. We shall see what happens with this. I think there's going to be, there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen, right? And we don't know. There was what, 4 American military personnel who were killed in Syria just yesterday or the day before. And who knows what's going to happen with that, right? There's going to be, as it looks like the U.S. is in more kind of chaos, there may be more incentives for terrorist organizations to take their shots and things like this, at which point does the Trump administration decide that maybe the best solution is just to go to war and that shifting that terrain? I don't know. So there's a lot of things that can happen between now and the election or any questions of impeachment. But we can be rest assured that we're going to be following here and we'll tell you what you think. So cool. All right. Anything else to wrap this segment up, Sean?
Nope.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. I want to remind everybody, if you can, become a member of Raging Chicken Press by going to patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member for as little as $5 a month. We will be back right after this with some PA Focus. See you then.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. That was the day the United States Supreme Court decided the case Moyers versus Peabody. The case grew out of the Colorado Labor Wars, a series of back-to-back strikes in 1903 and 1904 in the precious metals mines and ore mills. The Colorado National Guard meted out violent assaults, arrests, and deportations against strikers, often on orders from Colorado Governor James Peabody. The state militia routinely rounded up strikers and union leaders, detained them for weeks in bullpens, and ignored their habeas corpus petitions. Western Federation of Miners President Charles Moyer arrived in Telluride during a strike to find these repressive conditions. He signed a poster that read, "Is Colorado in America?" The poster included an image listing the many violations of basic democratic rights on the American flag. Moyer was arrested in March of 1904 for desecration of the American flag on the poster. He was detained on the grounds of military necessity, even after the courts ordered his release. His case traveled through the state and federal courts until the Supreme Court ruled. They held that the governor and officers of a state National Guard, acting in good faith and under authority of law, may imprison, without probable cause, a citizen of the United States in times of insurrection and deny that citizen the right of habeas corpus. The ruling radicalized the labor movement. Many concluded there could be no justice through the court system. A later case successfully challenged the ruling on the basis that the claims of insurrection were subject to judicial review. The ruling, however controversial, still stands today and was invoked after 9/11 in the 2004 ruling Hamdi versus Rumsfeld. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coot podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. And as always, I'm here with Sean Kitchen out there in Harrisburg, muckraker extraordinaire. And so speaking of muckraking or investigative reporting, it seems like you're going to get some company out there in Harrisburg.
Yeah, the Pennsylvania Capital Star will be launching soon.
So what is the Pennsylvania Capital Star, Sean?
The Pennsylvania Capital Star is going to be an independent progressive media outlet. I was actually one of the things that was actually talking to the actual person who runs this organization as trying to give them like law of the land out here in Harrisburg and try to fill things out. I think they made good hires with, Mysick and couple of my other friends who are going to be working for them, and I'm really interested to see what they're doing. But they did have a social media snafu.
They did. So if I wanted to look them up, would it be like PA Capital Star, Sean?
You would think it would be PA Capital Star.
But
their actual Twitter account is Penn Capital Star.
Penn seems a little awkward. Why not go with PA Capital Star, Sean?
Because an interloper decided to jack the PA Capital Star hashtag or Twitter accounts, all of them, after Mysick publicly announced that he was leaving for this project, and no one had a lock on any of the Twitter accounts. So either a troll from the Penn Live commentariat, stole the Twitter account, or some Republican operative or Koch brother funded operative took it, because that's who they might be investigating.
Well, let's be clear, that's not stealing. Right,
it's called trolling, right?
So here it is, like, this is social media 101, everybody. Okay,
if you're gonna announce something very big,
right,
Make sure you have the appropriate.
You buy all your domain names. You set up your Twitter accounts. You set up your Facebook pages. You get all that stuff ready, so that you own that. So when you launch, trolls don't get you, right? So whatever, man. But I do wish him a ton of luck. So I really hope that that whatever, this doesn't get all messed up in the troll stuff. But what's really interesting about this is that they're this is going to be an affiliate of an organization that's called the Newsroom, and the Newsroom's their like moniker is like relentless reporting state by state. Right. And here's their description. So the Newsroom is a growing network of state-based news outlets currently in Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, and Virginia, with a national bureau in Washington. Right. And they're all nonprofit agencies, and they do some pretty awesome investigative work. So Pennsylvania is now going to be part of that network. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we've been talking about for ages. It's like, you know, this kind of investment in kind of like, you know, media infrastructure is so essential. You know, if this organization, the Newsroom, is basically going to come in and kind of support this kind of endeavor, man, all the more power to them. We welcome in the state, because the more reporting that we get about, you know, focused specifically on state-based government, the better. And yeah, so we'll see where it goes. So I, you know, wish John Misek and his whole crew over there the best of luck moving forward, because look, we need it. Right?
Yeah, no, we don't.
Oh, but, dude, social media, man. get that shit straight.
Yeah.
I did go through. It's like, I remember when you first told me about, you know, that this was going to go. I was looking for the, well, anyway, I'm not going to go into that.
Oh, so it's you or it's the interloper here?
What do you mean? I didn't do it.
We thought it was Mark Price for a bit.
I didn't do it. Oh, really? Oh, God. How much will you give me for this? I just need a little bit. Crazy. So that's cool. So that'll be happening. That'll be launched pretty soon. And, Sean, it was a big week this week in Harrisburg.
Yes, there was the inauguration that went on in Harrisburg this week. And everyone was fawning and poo-pooing over bipartisanship.
Wait, they were fawning and poo-pooing?
Well, fawning over it. I'm sorry. I used the wrong colloquialism here.
I just had this picture of like a bunch of like aristocrats sitting around there in wigs, like saying like, oh, no, I just love – oh, no, we can't
They were fawning over the idea of bipartisanship, and they want to work together with the Republicans.
You know what? That you know, at least that's a fresh perspective on what the Democratic agenda should be, right?
We'll check back in on it when it's August 16th, 95 degrees out, with like 115 heat index, and there's still no budget to be done in the Capitol, and everyone's home on vacation for the summer.
Look, I just, you know, I was a little disappointed, I have to say, with some of the stuff that was coming out of the reporting on it, about things that were said by Wolf in particular. But
especially
also,
like, wanting Pennsylvania to be the Amazon. You know, let's not like attract Amazon. Let's build Amazon. Amazon is the wrong fucking
model
company to be like striving to be.
Right.
Like, they're one of the worst employers in the country. Like, with health violations and stuff like that, and, you know, breaking unions and, you know, forcing people to work ridiculous hours where contractors are wearing diapers because they can't go on a bathroom break. That's not who we want to strive to be.
No, that's like, you know what, you know, United Students Against Sweatshops and other organizations kind of work to draw attention to happening in other countries where the goods are produced. And now you see this is actually happening in the high tech sectors, particular companies like Amazon, that it's all about exploitation of workers. It's all like on demand working. And that's just no good. And, you know, again, is that you see the... I know why they're saying this stuff, because there was a lot of disappointment from people in Pittsburgh that Amazon did not choose them. If anybody was paying half attention to actually, like, you know, the way the world works, you would have known that Washington, D.C. or New York City were going to be the next locations. Right. I mean, just because, I mean, logistics about concentration of wealth, concentration of resources, concentration of brain power, or kind of location connection to.
And you look at it, like, I mean, their plants are all stuck in the middle in Pennsylvania. You have a plant in Allentown. You have a plant in Carlisle. Those are like 2 hours away from Philadelphia, 2 hours away from New York City, or 2 hours away from D.C., 2 hours from New York City. I mean, they have a lot of stuff built up on that, like 78-81 stretch between DC, Baltimore, and New York City.
Right, but it's like where are the concentrated? This is when I was looking at this, like, I'm like, you know, okay, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia was even kind of trying to get in the bid. I'm like, you know, where are the concentration of the most talented and like tech people like on the East Coast, right? Or the people that are going to be in the best position to serve Amazon's interest? It's not going to be
Pittsburgh's one of them.
What's that?
Pittsburgh's one of them, but Pittsburgh, you can't build anything in Pittsburgh right now.
It's too small. It's too small.
Well, it's too small, and everything's built out, and there's not enough open space to sustain.
There's like 1,001 reasons why it kind of wouldn't work. It's like even if look, Pittsburgh has got great stuff going for it in terms of high tech stuff, in terms of like knowledge economy crap, right? All that kind of stuff. Yes, absolutely. But when you think about
like geography, that's a hellscape.
Well, I mean, it depends what you mean. I mean, there's a lot about the geography that's really cool, right? But if you're thinking about it, if you're thinking about like you're in Seattle, right? And, you know, and you're these like tech folks in Seattle, and that's your mindset, the Silicon Valley mindset, right? And then you kind of come over here, and what are you looking for, right? You're not looking to go to like Rust Belt town. Right. You're looking to go to kind of where the action is, whether that is justifiable or not, is the way these people think. Right. And so that's where it is. Where's the glamour on the East Coast? Well, it's New York and it's D.C. Right. So I don't know. That was my personal thing. My bias from I thought that's the way this was going to go, that everything else was just about building hype. But whatever. And so that's – I mean, there were a lot of people disappointed about that. They really thought they had a shot. And so then Wolf comes in and basically saying that we could do it ourselves, right? YouTube guy was from Pittsburgh, right? So I don't know.
But I hate that comparison of saying that, like, we want to be like Amazon, when Amazon's one of the worst employers in the country.
Right. And it's like – exactly. So we can do better than that.
$14 an hour is supposedly like a good wage. You know, to do this type of factory work. Oh, well, they're paying a decent wage. No, they're not. $14 an hour is not a good wage for that type of work.
It is not.
Like, my dad was a Teamster working for Acme Warehouses, making $20, $25 an hour riding a forklift, you know, with a union job.
Right.
These are not union jobs that are coming in. There's no workplace protections at any of these plants. And if anyone tries to form a union, they'll fire the people and bring in more.
That's right. I mean, that's the way that they have operated. And a lot of the and many of the employees is that, yeah, there was all this big hype around it. Right. We even talked about on the show how Amazon kind of announced that it's going to start paying its workers a minimum of $15 an hour. But that did not apply to its contract workers, which represents a huge percentage of the workforce. Right. So that on the one hand, you've got, OK, yes, that's a step forward, $15 an hour minimum wage. But, you know, that doesn't really apply to everybody. Right. So they could have had a major impact by saying, OK, look, if you want to do business with us, you got to pay your employees a minimum of $15 an hour and you got to prove it to us. And if you're not paying them $15 an hour minimum wage, we're not going to contract with those employees. Right. I mean, simple things like that. But they don't. So it's like, you know, again, I look at this as like, I don't know. It's the wrong. Yes, you're absolutely right. It is the wrong reference point, but it's also the wrong mentality, right? I mean, you know what we got to start doing here. You start setting an agenda for the future, and this is why all the stuff about bipartisanship and, you know, this neutrality of we're just going to try to kind of get things done for Pennsylvania kind of stuff.
It's also like we shouldn't be like increasing our infrastructure and light rail and stuff like that to service companies. We should be doing this to service our communities.
Right.
Like, we should be having, you know, light rail in central Pennsylvania to alleviate the traffic congestion. So instead of putting a 12-lane highway going through the center of Harrisburg.
Right. Look, and PA Democrats have got to realize that it's going to matter. The messaging matters, and like what you're campaigning on. And what was so exciting about Fetterman's campaign, for example, it was the forgotten cities, right? The forgotten towns, the people that have been left behind, right? In the new economy, right? And he was speaking for those folks, right? And now to say that, look, our primary goal is going to be, I'm not just picking on Fetterman, but I'm saying, the tone that was set there is like, well, now we're going to come back. We're going to work with Republicans to try to work for all Pennsylvanians. It's like, you're going to lose people again. People need to know that once you get in power, right? Once you get in power, that you are going to continue to be there. And again, this week was inauguration week, so they're doing all the kind of like the language. We'll see what happens. But I sure as hell hope moving forward that, I mean, I'd like to see Fetterman be kind of traveling around the state, right, to all these towns, right, and talking about what they can do and kind of shining a light on it. This guy could actually, I think Fetterman even, like, more so than Wolf. Wolf is just not that guy. Fetterman is the kind of guy that could go around the state and bring the message of kind of like a progressive Pennsylvania, about one that is not going to leave people behind, right? And that is going to be, we're going to radically rethink like how we deal with the economy here. We're not just going to rely upon extractivism. We're not going to rely upon like, you know, Amazon base wages. No, we got a vision for the future. Right. And that we are no longer going to kind of like play the game that we've been playing for here. You know, and again, let's bring that back. Let's bring that messaging back. Let's bring that kind of progressive message about forward, that working class, kind of pro-working class, pro-union message forward, so that, you know, that you basically make Pennsylvania what it can be. And I worry that this, you know, the fetishization of bipartisanship is going to get in the way.
Yeah, we'll see people talking, how people are talking about bipartisanship once a budget stalemate goes into August, September, October, November.
Right. And look, it is it's a political strategy, right? I mean, part of it is a political strategy. You say, we're going to do bipartisanship. Nancy Pelosi did the same exact thing. Right. We're going to work across the aisle, blah, blah, blah. The things that you have to say. The question is that part of, okay, we'll give them a shot and then we're going to go. What's going to happen when that breaks down? I mean, like, they should be planning now for that.
Like, would you take a cut? Like, the Wolf wants a $12.50 minimum wage. Would you take $9.75 an hour in the name of bipartisanship just to get something like that passed? Minimum wage increase? No.
Right.
Like, no, you tell them, fuck you, it's $12.50.
Yeah. Or it's $15.
Yeah.
You just put $9.25 on the table? Oh, $12 off the table now then. $15 or nothing.
But like, I mean, that. Like, it's like these are some of the like arguments I was having with some of my friends this week. Like would you take a cheaper, like, absolutely not. I would absolutely not take a deal. I wouldn't even take $10.10 an hour now for minimum wage. Like, no, like that ship has sailed. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yep, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I always hate that logic too as well. I can't tell you how many contracts we've been negotiating. I haven't negotiated the contracts, but that our union has negotiated. And in the parts of the negotiations, you have whether it's local like union leadership or it's just other kind of faculty members that I work with, something like that. You start having the conversation is like, what's the lowest you would take? Right. I'm like, that's the wrong freaking conversation. Right. Let's not look at where we're going to settle. Right. Let's make them take it from us. Right. Let's set. What do we want? Right. And you only ask that question of what are you going to settle for when it becomes clear that there's no other option, that something's going to have to get. And we have to find out what the best deal is possible. You don't start there.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's all fun. So Brendan Boyle in the news this week.
Yeah. So we didn't include this, but so Brendan Boyle and Dwight Evans both got seats on the House Ways and Means Committee. And then Madeline Dean and Mary Gay Scanlon got seats on the House Judiciary Committee.
Ooh.
So when we impeach Trump, that'll be some of the most important votes in their first term.
Pretty, pretty cool.
But yeah, and then Boyle came out for Medicare for All support this week, now, basically saying,
so, "Yeah, go ahead." Sorry,
basically saying that it is unfinished business of the New Deal. He said universal health care is the unfinished business of the New Deal, which is great framing from his perspective because he's the head of the Blue Collar Caucus, mm-hmm. which is a left progressive caucus from people from the Rust Belt states. Who are more in line with labor populism and stuff like that.
Man, we'll see. This has got a lot of potential. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
We'll see where it goes. You just got to get straight on women's rights and then we'll be all good. all right. So yeah. So what else we got going on? We got good old Tom Marino.
Also Tom Marino resigned this week.
You think he was just like, I'm not going to, I have to work now. I don't want to do anything, so I'm going to get out of here.
You see, like, but when you're a minority, you don't have to work when you're a minority. like, when you're a minority, you don't got to do anything. You don't have to keep the ship sailing. It's not your responsibility. You know, there's plenty of people who like that type of stuff. So for me, it's interesting to see where he's at. I wouldn't be surprised if he has an indictment coming down.
Is it because of drug company stuff?
That or associations with Trump and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, you just don't really up and resign this early into a session. Like, I mean, if he had a job lined up, then why take it?
It didn't even really say, like, even at least in his statements, he wasn't even saying that really he had a job lined up. He just said he's going to go do this stuff in the private sector.
Yeah.
Right. So it sounded almost like he was looking to get out.
Yeah. But it's also the type of thing where, I mean, this isn't the type of move where you're trying to preserve a seat to keep Republicans in control because of how, like, skewed the seat is. Like, you know, Republicans will use this tactic of, like, resigning midterm to set up a special election and then have that incumbent run in the general election and try to keep them hold on to that seat.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, you know, it's the way the politics work. But even that, it doesn't even seem like the seat's a super safe Republican seat. So it's like they're not going to lose it. So
we'll just put a kind of a big question mark on that one, and we'll see. Kind of,
I mean, a way to, like, you know, force the state to spend like a few hundred thousand dollars on a special election.
Well, that's just it, right? Because it's going to cost a ton of money.
Yeah.
Right. To run a special election. And it just seems to me, my gut is just basically saying, well, he wanted out for some reason, that there's that. Without having, I don't know what it is. He just wanted out, and I'm not suggesting that it's kind of nefarious or anything like this, but something about the dynamic of being in the minority was something that was like, nope, he's going to get the heck out of here. And maybe it is because the more people look at, you know, now that Democrats are in charge, the more they start digging into stuff and basically enforcing ethics rules and stuff like this on the thing, that he's like, I'm not going to be able to make bank, so I'm out of here. Or we'll see. I don't know. Cool. Well, anything else going on around the state?
No, nothing really.
No, I was going to talk a little bit about, but I'm going to leave it off. Is like, there's been some back and forth now with and Pasci about the new chancellor and kind of like the transformation. What's that?
The system redesign.
Yep. And it's at least the stuff that's coming out publicly is, you know, ABSCUF is working closely with the chancellor, and there's a lot of good things that are going. We're concerned about some other stuff. But it's I don't have a sense at this point. I'm going to start digging into this now. Now that the semester starts next week. I just keep on getting the sense that there is enough people who are smitten with the new chancellor that something nefarious can slip its way in. That may not be the case, but we shall see. I just know that the report is being moved through very quickly, and the plan to redesign the system is moving through very quickly. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of noise being made about what's bad or good about it. Just a lot of general statements about working together and stuff. So it's got me a little bit concerned. But we shall see. We shall see. We'll come back to that. All right. So today, snow, weekend, snow. And then I think that's good to bring us into today's last call. So we'll be back right after this with today's last call. We got some space news. We got some culture news. We've got some beer news. And we'll see what else we can put on the table. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Is a war-fighting domain, just like the land, air, and sea.
Yes, the Space Force. Thanks to Sean for making my day. Right. This is not to say that Sean has been a space convert, but more that he is a social media head and he pays attention to stuff. Steve Carell. It is official now for the creators of The Office, starring Steve Carell, a new Netflix series coming soon, Space Force. It is coming out. When Sean told me about this, I was like, this is the best thing ever. It is right within the, I just think about Steve Carell. This is kind of right in his lane. There could be a link down in the show notes today where you can go check this out too as well. But they posted a video to Twitter, and it basically reads out. It says, "The goal of the new branch is to defend satellites from attack and perform other space related tasks." And then it goes to blank, it comes up or something. Right? So basically, like, we really have no idea what it is. This is the story of the men and women who have to figure it out. It's going to be awesome. I just cannot wait. I'm already going to set my search stuff and my Roku in order to get to this stuff because I'm so freaking excited about this. But it has so much potential. So
you still have Roku?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Over the weekend, they did you hear they gave tried to give Alex Jones a platform this week?
Are you kidding me?
Well, like, they pulled it within, like, 2 days because of all the people threatening to pull their accounts from Roku and take their money elsewhere.
Oh, I would have done the same thing. I mean, you got to be freaking kidding me. So they pulled it, so I'm safe now?
Yes. You will not be getting any extra male vitality supplement ads on Roku.
Damn. That was my in. Well, cool. So we got that. So Space Force is coming to Netflix. And with Steve Carell, it is, it promises, I mean, it's going to be awesome. I know it's going to be awesome. And the other news, like last night, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 launched. And yes, I watched it. And it was freaking awesome. I'm telling you, the writers of this show are just, they never, ever disappoint. For those of you, I don't know how many people of you listen to this actually watched the Star Trek Discovery. I know Sean was riveted by it last season, but they have at the end of the season one, it ends with I'm not going to give you a spoiler because in part because I know that there's a lot of people that haven't watched it yet that hopefully season two is going to bring them aboard. But the end of season one. I was like, oh man, really? I said, okay, because this was such a great season, and then you're gonna get this season. Oh, it's gonna end up being cheesy, right? They have this cheesy link because the writers, they're at their end, and nope, they start season two, and it was freaking riveting and mind bending, and especially if you've been a Star Trek fan, there are all these kind of like little Easter eggs all throughout the show that were kind of making reference to things within Star Trek, but then also. It just warps the entire the possibilities of what's actually happening and what timelines that you're following. Just very, very interesting. The acting's tremendous. Go check it out. If you remember that when Star Trek Discovery was first launched, part of it, one of the one of the things that the writers said is that they, you know, they were, it took a long time from them for the process to work itself out before the show got itself launched. When they finally got there, it was basically after Trump was elected, and they scrapped a bunch of the original things and said, nope, this is going to be the show for the Trump administration. And you've got an incredibly diverse cast. You have women in primary roles. You have kind of African-American, we've got Latina, Asian, all sorts of differences are being front and forward. In last season, part of the main storyline was about this ultra-nationalist wing of the Klingon Empire, which paralleled a lot of what was happening with the white nationalists within this country. So I'm really interested to see what kind of themes are going to be brought into the series this year, too, as well. So check it out. The downside of it is only on CBS All Access, which means you got to pay for it as an extra service. This is one of the reasons why I got rid of any cable or anything like that in my house, because I was like, okay, well, if I got to pay for a service, then I'm just going to do it through Roku or whatever it might be like that. So check that out. It's awesome. Other cool space news is that, as I mentioned this at the beginning and the intro today, is there's a really cool findings are coming out of the Cassini probe. Because a lot of the data that was sent back for the Cassini probe that had been circulating around Saturn for years, they're still analyzing that stuff as it comes in. And then they started taking some close look at a lot of what was happening at Saturn's largest moon, Titan, this past year. Since the data started coming back. And they started finding that it rains regularly on Titan, that it has an atmosphere, and part of what it's raining out organic compounds, right, down to the surface of the moon. So when you're raining down organic compounds, which means that it has the potential for life, right? So what kind of life you're talking about, we have no idea, or that kind of stuff, but it's a really interesting possibility about what's actually happening down there. So you've got one of the right now NASA's in the middle of kind of jockeying for which proposals are going to get support and so on. But one of them is to kind of have this drone called Dragonfly that would basically fly down right into the atmosphere of Titan and check out what's happening. So that was really cool. So put a link for that. So, yeah, I've got some Free Will news beer, and then we'll see what else is going on. Free Will this weekend is launching Blueberry Mash. It's a kettle sour with blueberry, vanilla, and milk sugar. It promises to be a pretty awesome release. I actually have to say this is the one that I've been looking at for a long time, or the one that I've seen lately. I haven't had a lot of taste for beer lately for whatever reason. But this one came up, I was like, ooh, this looks really good. They describe it like this. When winter has you feeling blueberry, you mash it up and toss it in a beer. And that's what we always say, or at least we do now. This kettle sour was brewed with blueberries, vanilla, and milk sugar, creating a scrumptious beer with tangy, fruity, subtly sweet, and a vibrant shade of magenta. It's like eating freshly picked wild blueberries straight off the bush without all the hard work. Ha, 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 ha. But it's going to be released in 16-ounce cans and 4-packs. It comes in at 7.5% ABV. Looks to be pretty freaking cool. So that's my rundown for today's last call. What else you got going on, Sean?
Nothing much. I've visited some breweries over the past week.
Do tell.
Which was nice. I went to Evergreen a couple times in the past week, which was nice to check in on again. So I had their Juice Juicy. They're Deuce Juicy, double IPA.
Good stuff.
And, yeah, nice stuff. And then ran into some customers I used to bartend for.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I had some really good conversations.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
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 Talk don't really about anything in particular or just...
some stuff, yeah.
Well, that's good. So it must have been nice to run into some folks you haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, they're asking me, they wonder like where the hell I went. I kind of just disappeared on them.
Yeah. Yeah, and every time you mentioned their name, like, every time I mentioned your name when I was there, everything went quiet, Sean. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Yeah, it's like I'm a legend.
Yeah, a legend. Or, yeah. You're infamous, let's say.
Yeah.
That's all I got. But this week has been I'm just thinking about this is like right now. Right. I mean, we got started later today than normal because my kids had a 2-hour school delay because there was like a 1/2 inch of snow on the ground and everyone was freaking out, apparently. So we got started a little bit later and it's like, you know, so I'm freaking exhausted at this point. And next week, I'm looking forward to. I actually have to pick up my stuff for my sleep test to see if, you know, so they can actually kind of confirm the diagnosis that I got sleep apnea. And then, you know, people are telling me that if I get this corrected, it's going to help a whole lot. Because I'm telling you, it's been a long time now. I just figured it's because I was like not happy at all with my job and stuff like this. I'm like, I'm just bummed out, man. And I'm just like, but I think it's actually, it's more than that. And I got to the point in the last fall, man, this is like full disclosure. I was like, I started getting worried because I'm like, you know, I have never been this exhausted in my entire life. I mean, where I actually every day, no matter, you know, I go to bed at 9:30. I mean, it was unheard of. I go to bed at 9:30. I used to go to bed at like midnight, the earliest, for most of my life, since high school. But it's like now it's like I go to bed at 9:30. I wake up and I'm not rested, even if I sleep for, you know, a solid 10 hours or something like that. So it's been really weird because it's been really hard to focus. I can't get enough stuff done. So hopefully this is gonna kind of deal with that, because it's, holy moly, it's been crazy. So that's my saga story, Sean. And meanwhile, my dog is recovering from his neutering this week.
Snip, snip.
Yep. So it was funny. We had the ongoing discussion in their house where I was like, because like, you know, he's like, you know, dogs get older, right? You know, male dogs, their balls drop, right? So they'll, all of a sudden they got a package down there, right? and so we're going around the house singing, "Who let my balls drop? Who?"
Right? I thought it was going to like lean to like a sex ed talk with your kids in an uncomfortable manner.
No, you got to do it in kind of like, you know, in a mocking way. That's the way you introduce it. Yeah. And then my son last week, because then like, you know, you talk about you're going for the operation, he's gonna have it out and things like this, and he comes up and he's like, yeah, he's like, Dad, they're gonna, Potter's gonna come back and he's gonna be sitting there. I bet you we're gonna hear him sing something. He's like, oh really? Like what? He's gonna say like, "Who cut my balls off?" So that's that. So he's recovering. It's always like, you know, we always do shit like this right before I have to go back to school. So I'm trying to kind of like finish off a bunch of work. So I'm kind of a bunch of work for school, prepare for next week's classes to start to begin. And now I've got a dog that I got to kind of, you know, nurture at home and all this stuff. So that's where I'm at. I'm out of steam. So you got anything planned for the weekend for this big, the big snowstorm that's headed your way?
No, I might partake in some vices. That's about it.
Partake in some vices, like making snowmen and stuff.
Drinking beer.
You know, drinking beer, getting some juice. I would hear like, you know, smoothies and like, you know, drinking lots of juice when it's cold outside and raining is really
it
good
helps.
For you.
Yeah.
And I know that you've got like, you know, right around in your area too as well, you got lots of fresh juice. So
some of the best juice you can get.
Yeah, there you go.
Homemade. So,
homemade. There you go. Well, cool, man. Well, you know, stay safe. Hopefully that you're not going to get hit by the worst of the storm that's coming here. Unless you want that, you know, maybe you want, because, you know, be hang out at home and be like, "Oh, I can't go anywhere. Oh, well, only one thing to do." Pop it. one thing I was going to say is that about my dog being neutered, the one thing I do have to say is that, I lifted a can, my last can of Ralphius to him, after that. So it was very good. Very good.
Nice.
All right, man. Well, hey, let's, hopefully we get back on track now. We'll be back on for our regular program. Sorry we missed last week, everybody. But thanks for sticking with us. And, so we go from here. Any last words for the good of the order, Sean?
Have fun this weekend, I guess, with the snow that's coming.
Have fun this weekend with the snow. Everybody get
juiced. Don't. Yep.
don't get. Learn how to drive. Learn how to drive. Or just play. All right, it's Kevin Mahoney. We're out of here. See ya!